This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 5th of December 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 5th of December, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week: We Want Change, People's Message to the City Council. Police recover 126 weapons in amnesty. And in response to the first one, we do listen and we do make changes, says leader. So, Nikki, may we have the headline, the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was, "We Want Change, People's Message to the City Council." More than 1,000 people took to the streets of Winchester to protest against development they fear will wreck the city. The Winchester March shut down streets last Saturday as residents chanted and waved placards denouncing councillors for refusing to listen to the public by charging ahead with developments including Silver Hill, Station Approach, Chessel Street Extra Care and a replacement for River Park Leisure Centre. Around 1,100 people marched to horns, drums and chants of "We Want Change" as they trudged from North Wall's recreation ground to the doorstep of Winchester City Council at the Guildhall. It was Winchester's biggest public demonstration in decades, eclipsing a string of protests in the early 2000s against developments in Barton Farm. The procession, joined by children in pushchairs and dogs dressed in campaign gear, passed a number of controversial sites along the way, which have stoked their discontent. Pressure groups at the march included Save the Wreck, fighting plans to rebuild River Park Leisure Centre on green space, and the Winchester Deserves Better group, which is taking civic chiefs to the High Court over the £165 million Silver Hill development of shops and homes. Residents also challenged the council's alleged lack of transparency and consultation on projects including the Chessel Street Extra Care Scheme, the 2,000-home Barton Farm Estate, and a major regeneration of the station approach area. Organisers stressed that the campaign supports development, but demands better consultation on the way schemes are designed and implemented. The crowds rallied at the Guildhall steps with music, dancing and speeches. Addressing the throng, campaigner Rosemary Burns said Winchester was a jewel among cities. She said the council failed to listen to the public in its so-called consultation. "We want the enhancement of our heritage, not destruction. We want the preservation of our high street, our city markets, prosperous and independent traders. We want you to hear us. Winchester City Council, we want change." Watching on, City Housing Portfolio holder, Councillor Ian Tate, said the demonstration was entirely negative and did not make any suggestions for improving the controversial schemes. But march organiser, Mike Caldwell, said more marches will follow if the City Council does not change its ways. Mr Caldwell claimed that up to 4,000 people joined the demonstration, later revising this figure to around 2,000. But the Chronicle counted 1,114 protesters, including several city and county councillors, as the march passed into Park Avenue. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who is taking his own Tory administration to London's High Court over the Silver Hill scheme, said he was delighted with the turnout. The Silver Hill scheme is set to be determined at a special planning meeting next Thursday, December the 11th, despite being subject to a judicial review in the new year. Councillor Gottlieb has written to the council urging the meeting be postponed. In a letter to the council, former planning committee member Karen Barrett said, "If Henderson's application is approved but the judicial review is subsequently successful, it will only make a complicated situation worse. Winchester City Council should really stop digging and accept that mistakes have been made. The sensible course would be to delay the decision until the legal questions have been settled." And there are several photographs, and obviously a lot of people on the demonstration, but some of the placards read as follows: "Heritage, not Henderson. Winchester deserves better. Council, change your ways. Heritage not Henderson again, Listen to the People, Leave High Rises to the Cathedral, and many more.
Police recover 126 weapons in an amnesty. Police have recovered more than 100 guns as part of a county-wide surrender of weapons. Over a 12-day period, Hampshire Constabulary received 126 weapons and hundreds of rounds of ammunition. It was part of a national crackdown to stop guns falling into the wrong hands. Chief Constable Andy Marsh said, "This is a significant recovery and I'm surprised. There are very few guns in the hands of criminals within England and Wales. These are exactly the sort of weapons that criminals would want to have to commit crime, and allowing people to surrender them voluntarily helps to continue to make Hampshire and the Isle of Wight a safe place to live. Any guns in the hands of criminals is too many." He added that every year 500 guns are reported lost or stolen in England and Wales, and so far this year 10 of those were in Hampshire. Among the recovered weapons were rifles, shotguns, a World War One Very pistol, and a 1940s World War II Lanchester submachine gun. All of the guns will be destroyed, apart from a triple-barreled shotgun, which is so rare it will be used to train the firearms team. Sergeant Anna Hewitt, who's been helping run the amnesty, estimated that over half the guns were more than 30 years old. "There are quite a few older, rusty ones that were found in garages," she said. There were certificate holders that decided they wanted to give them up. "There are quite a few that have come back from the First and Second World Wars and been found in elderly relatives' houses. We don't care what they are or where they're from. We just want them here so that they cannot go on to the market." Mr. Marsh added, "Even though it's finished now, if people come across a gun that shouldn't be there, they should call the police. It's not something we will run all the time, but we will look at it next year." And there's a photograph, sort of close-up, of Sergeant Annie Hewitt with the First World War flare gun. She's holding it up in front of her face. And then there's another one of Hampshire Police Constable Andy Marsh with some of the weapons handed in during the amnesty. Some, there's an enormous number on a table that he's leaning on, and obviously a large bag full of ammunition.
"We do listen and we do make changes," says Leader. This is a reply to Nikki's article. Winchester City Council Leader has defended its consultation record after more than 1,000 people took to the streets to demand their voices be heard over major development schemes. Councillor Rob Humby said he was in discussions over ways to improve the council's communication with the public, but insisted that it does a very good job of consulting on schemes which came under fire at Saturday's Winchester March. He said that in some cases campaigners had misunderstood, forgotten, or ignored the council's messages and changes to controversial projects, including the Silver Hill development, extra care housing in Chesil Street, and replacing River Park Leisure Centre. Councillor Humby, who was away on a birthday trip at the time of the march, said, "Everybody has a democratic right to make their feelings known. It's something that we have to listen to. I think we do a very good job of consultation. We can be more proactive in how we announce it and publicise it. I absolutely accept that. But if you don't satisfy the people who are saying something different, they will say you haven't consulted or haven't listened." As examples of changes after consultation, Councillor Humby cited significant changes to parking at the Chesil Street scheme, and the way the council pushed and pushed and pushed for Henderson to pledge £1 million towards off-site affordable housing after dropping 100 cut-rate homes from its Silver Hill proposal. We get frustrated when people say we haven't consulted when we have, he said. We do listen, and we do make changes. Other misunderstandings, he claimed, included the idea that the council would build a new leisure centre across North Wall's cricket pitches. He said, I met March organiser and Save the Wreck campaigner Mike Coldwell and told him categorically we would not build on the cricket pitch. There was never a case we were ever going to build right across the cricket pitch. He still doesn't accept that we're not. Addressing Silver Hill, one of the biggest issues at Saturday's march, he said, some protesters were forgetting that the scheme already has a planning application and has been through consultation. He warned that unless the current scheme goes through, Winchester could end up like Portsmouth, which last week heard that 1,500 new jobs are at risk after its £300 million city centre regeneration fell through.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, historical item, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Carter, Eric Carter, peacefully at Colden Common, aged 87. Carter, Ronald Carter, died peacefully in Basingstoke Hospital, aged 66. Kubra, Mary Kubra, peacefully in hospital, aged 89. Deer, Keith John Arthur Deer, died at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 66. Depletion Light, Amy Depletion Light, on the 29th of November, aged 94. Griffiths, John Griffiths, who died peacefully at home, aged 63. Hall, Leslie Charles Hall, died on the 20th of November, aged 90. Harvell, Leonard Harvell, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 92. Larkham, Neil Larkham, died on the 27th of November, aged 64. Leek, Michael Anthony Leek, died peacefully on the 25th of November, aged 78. Monaghan, Brenda Monaghan, died at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, aged 80. Page, Roy Anthony Page, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 83. Seeger, Dennis Seeger, died on the 28th of November at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Selwood, Emilienne Selwood, died peacefully after a short illness, aged 99. Spencer, Margaret Onslow Spencer, died on the 30th of November, aged 92. Swain, Graham Arthur Swain, died on the 23rd of November following a stroke, aged 71. And Wallage, Frank Desmond Wallage, died at Westacre Nursing Home, aged 90. And now we're going to move on to Christian comment, and that's read by Albie.
Christian comment, Isaiah, Pope Francis, and a vision for Europe's renewal. The season of Advent is with us once more, and for those who love the Bible, it is time to hear again the inspiration of the prophet Isaiah. It is no accident that Christians consider the book of Isaiah almost as a fifth gospel. All the peoples of the book, Jews, Christians, and Muslims, as well as all who seek peace, are inspired by his words and his messianic vision. Indeed, his most famous prophecy, Isaiah 2:4-6, on nations hammering their swords into ploughshares and their spears into sickles, is now written on the granite curved wall called the Isaiah Wall in the plaza in front of the United Nations building in New York. Isaiah's vision of sustainable peace summoned wayward kings of his time, 8th century BC, back to the original vision of their covenant with Jahwe. Then as now, this peace, far more than a mere cessation of hostilities, required difficult dimensions, a profound sense of repentance, forgiveness, and reconciliation between states, social groups, communities, and individuals. Something of this vision was glimpsed in the European Parliament at Strasbourg last week, when it was addressed by Pope Francis. Like Isaiah in Israel, the Latin American Pope recalled Europe to its original inspiration, its core values of peace: subsidiarity, solidarity, and the dignity of the human person. He saw an ageing, apathetic Europe which had lost sight of these ideals in favour of a technological bureaucracy and an egotistic, unsustainable lifestyle. His dramatic appeal to Europe was through the tragic image of the Mediterranean becoming a huge graveyard, evoking the deaths of so many migrants who had set out in flimsy boats in their attempt to come to Europe. Pope Francis's appeal was to Europe's tradition of hospitality, calling for a new immigration policy. Like Isaiah's call for his people to return to their original integrity, his solution to the problem areas he identified was to give Europe hope by restoring a sense of transcendence and the centrality of the human person, to nurture the gifts of each person through an education, not least in the family, which should enable the human person to develop in his or her totality. Christianity should not be seen as a threat to the secularized Europe, but an enrichment. Could the standing ovation which greeted the speech in Strasbourg stimulate us, in our own corner of Europe, to make Isaiah's words real in our lives? Not only is his call to work for sustainable peace crucial, but his vision of redeemed and restored creation, when all creatures live in harmony, is a gift to inspire our efforts this season. Mary Gray.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to letters to the editor. The first three letters all relate to parking issues. So, Nikki, can you start us off, please?
And this from Katja Ayling, Winchester. Parking strategy is vital for city's future. Sir, what's the point of celebrating the prospective arrival of 400,000 visitors to Winchester over the festive season if they are, all they do is sit gridlocked in their cars or scouring car parks for parking? Based on this experience, they will not come back again, nor be able to get out to engage with the city. The economic health of the city will not be improved, nor the health of the pedestrians obliged to inhale the exhaust fumes. On this sunny pre-Christmas Sunday, it has just taken a visitor 25 minutes to travel down Magdalen Hill. To propose ad hoc closing and redistribution of city centre car parking and an increase in retail space and housing is senseless without a comprehensive joined-up strategy for access and parking. Park and Ride is not the cornerstone of a solution. Last week, visitors had to wait 2 hours for their return ride, and bus timings make it impossible to return to the car park after an evening out. Of course, there is also the simple fact that if people are looking for a quality experience, possibly buying a quantity of goods, they just want to be able to load their cars there and then. A comprehensive access and parking strategy must provide an inner-city parking and transport solution that provides for current and increased numbers of residents who seek a quality of life that gives them the choice of adequate car use. The proposed closure of the Chessel Street car park, impact on residents' parking spaces, and subsequent overdevelopment of a city centre site exacerbates these problems in every way. Fewer car parking spaces on an arterial road leads to more visitors attempting to drive into the city itself. 52 new units, perhaps 70 incremental residents, put further strain on resident parking. Winchester will only continue to be a desirable place to live, which people are prepared to pay for, as long as, one, residents whose lives require cars can park adequately. Two, development contributes positively to the daily lives of residents, not just visiting shoppers. This means that development must provide more than retail and cafe space, but areas for a community to commune, to relax, be creative, learn new things, and do things together. 3. Development is in keeping with the city's historical setting, respecting, not overwhelming in mass, height and style, thereby contributing to a quality environment. And that from Katja Ayling, Chessel Street, Winchester.
Also on a similar topic, Caroline Dennis of Worthy Lane, Winchester, writes, and it's the letter is prefaced by a photograph, smallish photograph, of a corner of an obviously packed car park. And has the caption, "Where will those who currently use the cattle market park their cars?" So, Gateway Car Park must be retained, she says. "Sir, at 12:20 on Thursday, November the 27th, the cattle market Worthy Lane car park was completely full. Cars were circling round trying to find spaces. There is a mere 4 weeks before Christmas and the feverish shopping that accompanies it. The car park is used by visitors, tourists, local residents and a variety of small local businesses, ranging from dental surgeries to locksmiths. Yet, despite the recommendations by Winchester Chamber of Commerce and WINAC that this car park be retained as a gateway car park, and despite the fact that the conclusion by Aspinall Verdi at the end of the Tibbles report that it would not necessarily be financially viable to develop that piece of land, Winchester City Council persists in proposing its use for, quotes, better business space, unquote. The park and ride at Barton Farm will not be built until phase two, by which time approximately 350 new homes will have been built. Can the councillors tell us where they foresee the large volume of traffic that use this site at present and would need to in the future will park? Presumably, they will drive helplessly round and round Winchester, adding to the general pollution and congestion that already blights the city." Caroline Dennis, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And the third one on parking comes from Phil Gagg of St Swithin Street, Winchester, under the heading "Chessel Multi-Story is More Popular." "Sir, unfortunately, I cannot agree with the analysis your correspondent Bill Ledbetter, letters November the 27th, gives of the use of the Chessel car parks. Chessel open car park is often full, but this does not mean it is more popular than Chessel multi-storey car park. WINAC surveys since 2010 show that on normal weekdays, Chessel multi-storey has 300 spaces filled. Chessel open has only an average of 75 spaces filled. This means that the multi-storey car park is routinely four times more popular than the open car park. On November the 30th, the multi-storey provided parking for 625 cars and was well over seven times more popular than the open car park. I think we should all take advantage of Councillor Humby's desire for a constructive dialogue, letters also November 27th, but we should make sure the dialogue is based on fact, not erroneous beliefs. I agree with Mr. Ledbetter that Chessel Open Car Park is not suitable for an extra care home. Senior buggies will not be able to cross City Bridge and the occupants will be isolated and depressed. Far better to put the home within safe reach of facilities and build it in Middle Brook Street, another small dispensable car park, or in Wick. Chessel Open Car Park would be a good site for affordable housing, designed to complement the stunning frontage to the west of the street. A one-way access loop could be introduced, bringing traffic in along Barfield Close and taking it out along Chessel Street. This would free up space in Chessel Street for safe loading, cycling and pedestrians, and enable the construction of a cycle track along Barfield Close. Chesil Multistory would be clearly visible to arriving drivers and become even more popular. Coaches could unload their passengers by the Multistory and return along Chesil Street, avoiding City Bridge.
And this from Joe Page. It's the manner of change that grates. Sir, what clearer proof could there be of the Council Planning Committee's collective deaf ear than Rob Humby's letter to the Hampshire Chronicle last week? I'm happy to meet anyone with concerns, he wrote, but I don't simply want to be told that things must change. Were he to listen to the concerns of Winchester residents, he'd realise that Silver Hill protesters fully accept the need to change and develop the area. It is the manner in which it is being done that is so unpopular. The Winchester Deserves Better campaign has numerous positive suggestions for developing the Silver Hill site in a way that will enhance this historic city. Let's hope Councillor Humby really does engage in the constructive dialogue he claims to welcome. Then he can learn more about them. Joe Page, Grafton Road, Winchester.
Not surprisingly, another letter about the council activities from David Selby of West Hill Road North, South Wanston, again asking, is he really listening to our concerns? Sir, Councillor Humby may hear public opinion, but there is no evidence so far that Winchester City Council has any intention of responding positively to it. The Silver Hill project itself needs to be changed back to what was promised. A city for the future should encourage more use of pollution-reducing public transport and should be promoting an effective public transport interchange. Moreover, the jobs that he wants to protect and create would be enhanced by the provision of affordable housing in the city centre. If the plans now before the City Council are approved, it will indicate clearly that the ruling party care little for the less well-off, who stand to benefit most from the above, and only really care for the profits of the developers, who will want to sell their luxury apartments to commuters from the capital, increasing city jobs. It appears to the man in the street that 100 affordable homes have been sacrificed for the expansion of the retail space. Councillor Humby talks about, quotes, the challenges facing the retail sector, unquote, in the face of an increase in online purchasing, the current apparent decline in the profits from large stores, and the evident, quote, success, unquote, of the Brook Centre, whose aesthetic addition to the Winchester street scene is plain for all to see. The huge slabs of buildings in the Henderson booklet do not enhance the appearance of Winchester, and future visitors may be disappointed by this unattractive change in its appearance. The less well-off will have to put up with two bus arrival departure points about 200 metres apart. But, as Henderson says, quote, the new facility better meets the needs of the bus industry, unquote. Not necessarily the needs of passengers, who will benefit from a walk through the retail area when changing buses. How profitable. David Selby, West Hill Road, North, South Wanston.
And now a different topic, an opportunity for independent schools. Sir, the charitable status of independent schools, such as Winchester College and St Swithin's, has been much in the news recently. Is there an opportunity for the independent schools in Winchester to take the lead in implementing new partnerships with some of our more deprived local areas? The independent schools enjoy significant benefits because they are generally exempt from paying corporation tax and VAT, and also enjoy favourable treatment on business rates. In return, schools have obligations to provide public benefits. There is a view held by many that the public benefits that the schools provide are disproportionately small relative to the tax benefits that they receive. One way that the schools could dispel this myth is if they committed proportionate funds and resources to addressing some of the social and educational deprivation within their own communities. So what better place to start than a partnership between Winchester College and the Stanmore community that sits on its doorstep? The social deprivation statistics for Stanmore show a significant decline across all of the categories. According to the most recent statistics, the deprivation in terms of education, skills and training is particularly high. Stanmore North is now one of the 7% most educationally deprived areas in the country. In the spirit of charity, starting at home, this seems to be an opportunity too good to be missed. Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Winchester.
Thank you. Now that ends the letters. We're going to move back in time for the historical items. And firstly, Nikki, 200 years ago, please.
On December the 5th, 1814, villains foiled by ventriloquist. A few evenings since, as Mr. Charles, the ventriloquist, accompanied by Mr. Turmo, was returning from Bristol to Bath, they were stopped at a little distance from Bristol by two footpads, who resolutely demanded their money and watches. Mr. Turmo was reluctantly about to comply when suddenly two voices were heard, as from the side of the road, vociferating almost at the same moment. "Hola, you villains! We have been looking after you these 3 days, and now we have caught you." The fellows, conceiving the voices to proceed from two officers of the police, were glad to betake themselves to their heels for safety. By this ingenious stratagem did Mr. Charles preserve his own property and that of his friend.
Excellent. 100 years ago, this one, December the 5th, 1914, of course. Two pieces. One is headed Germans on the Defensive. Paris, Tuesday. The Matin Petrograd correspondent, in a dispatch dated November the 30th, writes, "For the time being, the Germans are almost everywhere on the defensive. Only on their flanks are they attacking, on the left bank of the Vistula and the right bank of the Warta, but without any success. The arrival of fresh German reinforcements is semi-officially announced. These reinforcements are, in the main, coming to the aid of the weakened German forces operating in the regions of Stierkopf, Balavia and Dunskavolia." And the second item is Washington, December the 1st. "Reviewing the four months of the campaign, the military expert of the New York Exchange Sun declares that certain things have become unmistakably clear. Above all else, it is plain, first, that the great German design has failed utterly and irretrievably. Whatever may happen in the future, it is certain that France is not to be destroyed. When the war is over, France will retain her place as a great power, and her army will continue to be a factor in the European combinations."
Yes, now an article from 50 years ago, December the 5th, 1964, which shows that things don't change very much. "Closure to cause inconvenience. Members of the walking public are going to be very much inconvenienced, but this is the best we can do." With these words, Alderman C.A. Taylor, Chairman of Winchester City Council's Highways Committee, introduced to the council on Wednesday a minute announcing closure of part of the pedestrian way under the Pendythe. After rejecting by 12 votes to 7 an amendment which might have meant St. George's Street becoming two-way, the council approved the minute and a recommendation that an order should be made for a temporary 10-mile-per-hour speed limit in High Street between Market Street and Jury Street. A town with a population of over 5,000, with more industry and a new bypass. This is the future of Whitchurch, as the Hampshire planners see it. In a draft township map published this week by the County Council, These and other proposals, such as the provision of a new primary school, more public car parks, and a new quarter ring road designed to reduce traffic in the town centre, are outlined.
And finally, from 25 years ago, December the 8th, 1989, sewage pipe bursts despite claims. Alsford residents' fears turned into reality at the weekend when a sewage pipe ruptured, spewing raw waste into a stream at Spring Gardens. A resident of New Farm Road, Mrs. Jo Wager, said this week that what happened was precisely what Southern Water claimed would not happen. She said, "We've been campaigning this summer for them to put a septic tank in the ground and to clear it occasionally. Instead, they put in an overflow pipe. They assured us that what happened at the weekend would never happen. They put an open pipe into our stream, which goes into the River Itchen. What was coming out on Saturday was raw, untreated sewage." And a second item from 1989. "The Queen came through fire, frost and fog to open the new Royal Greenjackets Museum in Winchester last week. The bad journey meant she arrived half an hour late at the Peninsula Barracks, where assembled dignitaries had been waiting in near freezing temperatures for 45 minutes. Clearly embarrassed, the Queen apologised for the delay and then stayed over the time scheduled for the visit." Well, that concludes historical items. Now it's Chronicle comment, editorial comment. Nikki.
And this is the Hampshire Chronicle, headed our 242nd year. Message received, but is it understood? As far as messages go, consider it sent. More than 1,000 people chanting and waving placards joined the Winchester March on the city's Guildhall last Saturday, claiming that a raft of developments in the pipeline would ruin the city. The protesters denounced councillors for refusing to listen to the public by forging ahead with developments including Silver Hill, Station Approach, Chessel Street Extra Care Housing and a replacement for River Park Leisure Centre. Organisers claimed that thousands had joined the protest, but in truth the numbers were around the 1,100 mark, still impressive and the biggest turnout of its kind the city has seen for many a long day. Young and old joined the procession, including children in pushchairs and dogs dressed in campaign gear. But the question remains, is the council listening? Leader Rob Humby steadfastly says the council is listening and has amended various other plans in the past following consultation. But it seems the council's stance and that of the protesters, particularly over Silver Hill, are poles apart. This impasse does nobody any good, least of all the city, which both sides claim they are championing.
And now it's first person, read by Graham.
Yeah, this is written this week by George Hayter, who entitles it, as it were, "Forest Ponies Might Like to Be Beside the Seaside." Horses grazing by the sea. It's an image I grew up with. A painting in my childhood home showed ponies in the New Forest, but with the Solent and the Isle of Wight in the background. The artist put the ponies close to a cliff top with the Needles behind them. There were about four adult horses and a couple of foals in that coastal setting of heather and grass. I spent much of my youth within sight of that picture, and I believed in it. I assumed it showed a place where forest and sea really did coexist. Of course, the picture was a fantasy. As I grew up, I was disappointed to discover that nowhere does the New Forest extend to the sea. Like everybody else, I have until now accepted that state of affairs. After all, there are few places on this crowded island where nature is expanding. Areas of forest and heath are under threat in the UK, and we in the southeast count ourselves particularly lucky if we manage to keep building development at bay. We never think of areas of natural land actually expanding. Maybe we should. Perhaps the New Forest could grow. Currently, the forest gives way to fields 2 or 3 miles short of the coast. Between Livington and Calshot, there are few buildings, and returning the agricultural land there to wilderness could be achieved relatively cheaply if the idea was adapted as a long-term strategy. Of course, the reaction of landowners could be decisive, but as generations pass, funds could be raised and change might be possible. People living around Barton Farm in Winchester might not agree, but I think that in the wider scale of things, New Forest expansion would make up for the housing development planned for fields close to the centre of Winchester. Too much of the Hampshire coast is spoilt by housing development, while in Dorset, the coastal sprawl is almost unbroken from sandbanks to Highcliff. The seaside suburbs of Sussex stretch largely unbroken for 30 miles from Selsey Bill to past Brighton. Allowing the New Forest to expand would set a national precedent and could reverse the tide of concrete in other beauty spots around Britain. The New Forest National Park already extends to the Solent, even if the forest itself does not. Since 1847, forest quiet has been violated by trains, and for 100 years noise from road traffic has been increasing. In its northern half, a vast swathe is spoilt by high-speed roar from the dual carriageway A31 to Ringwood. A southward extension could be seen as a long overdue compensation for those boorish incursions into our ancient wild land. Bringing the coast and the forest together would increase the beauty of both. The idea is ambitious, but like most ambitions, all it needs is a will.
Thank you. Now we're going to end this section with Belgarum. Three little items from Belgarum. Albie.
Yes, and the first of the three, search for mystery lifesaver from 20 years ago. The search is on for a Winchester man who saved a boy from drowning almost 20 years ago. A mystery man known only as Chris rescued Owen Chambers, then aged 9, from a deadly riptide in Australia in 1995. Now dozens of locals are tracking him down, so Owen's mother Melanie can thank him personally for saving her son's life. The Chambers' summer holiday almost ended in tragedy 19 years ago when Owen was nearly swept away on Bondi Beach, Sydney. Chris, who was working in a laundrette in Bondi at the time, rushed to the rescue but left before Melanie could thank him. Owen's sister, Holly, recorded his name, hometown and occupation in a diary she was writing for school. The Winchester native's whereabouts since the rescue are unknown. Melanie Chambers, who recently moved to London from West Yorkshire, wrote to BBC Radio 4's Saturday Live for its weekly spot, where listeners can express their gratitude for good deeds that went without thanks at the time. More than 60 well-wishers, including Winchester MP Steve Brine, shared the story on social media in the hope that it will reach Chris's friends or relatives in Hampshire. Owen Chambers, now 28, is set to become a doctor after his training in Liverpool and credits the mystery man with saving his life. And the second item, under the heading, Is New Maternity Unit in Wrong Postcode for Some? Childbirth is an agonising and trying business. The mere thought of it makes Belgarum reach for the gas and air. NHS bosses are therefore hopeful that the prospect of a swish new maternity unit at the planned hospital near Basingstoke will prove an enticing prospect. But they may face an unexpected hitch with selling this concept to the more socially sensitive among Winchester's pregnant masses. The sticking point appears to be the word Basingstoke appearing on birth certificates, because some mothers aren't sure it gives the right assurance of pedigree. I made my husband push on to Winchester when he wanted to stop at Swindon Hospital, said one feisty city matriarch, who then nearly gave birth on the A34. I can see why they might be worried. The Dowager Countess of Grantham would be proud of them, even if the issue prompts eye-rolling among senior midwives. And the third item, fire alarm is keeping council staff out in the cold. Officers at Hampshire County Council have been thanking their lucky stars the weather has been fairly mild this winter, as builders forced them from their workplace. Employees at the castle, where building works are ongoing, have been evacuated a number of times over the last few weeks as a result of an overly sensitive fire alarm. The foreman apologised yet again for the disruption as council workers gathered at their fire assembly point at steps overlooking Winchester Crown Court for what had apparently been the fifth time in just over a week.
Thank you. Now we move on to this week's announcements. What's on? We've got some concerts to give you advance warning of. Thursday the 11th of December at 7:30, there's the Diva Singers are featuring at Wesley Methodist Church, Stony Lane at Week. And for details on that, telephone 01962 880 842. On Friday the 12th of December at 7 p.m, there's a Winchester Cathedral Carol concert. The tickets from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. The same evening, Friday the 12th of December at 6:30 p.m, Christmas choral and instrumental music in Romsey Abbey, and that's in aid of Gift of Sight. For details on that, telephone 01794 512 502. And lastly, on Sunday the 14th of December at 6:30 p.m, in Winchester College Chapel, Christmas Favourites and Audience Carols, and that's in aid of Brendan Care Foundation. And for that, you need tickets, can be obtained from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. And in terms of the theatre, just a reminder that the Theatre Royal Winchester is running Sleeping Beauty from next Tuesday, the 9th of December, through to the 4th of January, various times. And the box office for the Theatre Royal is 01962 840 440. A lighting up time ends Friday the 5th of December at 7:52 a.m. and begins at 4 p.m. And on Wednesday the 10th of December, it ends at 7:57 a.m. and begins at 3:58 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with this recording that we send, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
Headed, King Benedict at Great Hall. Hollywood A-lister Benedict Cumberbatch has been in Winchester as part of a secretive shoot for a major television series. The Sherlock actor, currently starring as codebreaker Alan Turing in the blockbuster film The Imitation Game, is filming a new Shakespeare adaptation in the city's Great Hall. The film set has been fenced off during the week, during the three-week shoot, with all entrances to the ancient site barricaded until December the 10th. The actor is playing Richard III in The Hollow Crown, a BBC adaptation of Shakespeare's historic plays. It is unclear whether other stars of the series, including Dame Judi Dench, are also filming in Winchester. Officials remain tight-lipped about Mr. Cumberbatch's involvement, with runners and cameramen on set variously telling The Chronicle that they were filming Batman, an Emmerdale Christmas special, and Harry Potter 57. But one crew member, who asked not to be named, confirmed that the star had been on set filming The Hollow Crown. Quotes, "I don't know whether he's here today, but he's been doing some scenes up here," unquotes, he said last Saturday. Tourists peered around the barricades and snapped photographs of the set, hoping to catch a glimpse of the star. One curious onlooker said, "That would be really cool if he was in there. I'm from Reading, where we don't have these historic buildings." The Great Hall, dating from 1067, once formed part of Winchester's Norman Castle. Such historic sites are a magnet for filmmakers, and this is not the first time the city has attracted Hollywood A-listers. Hundreds of sightseers flocked to Winchester Cathedral in 2012 as Russell Crowe starred in Les Misérables, and the city was previously been the backdrop of movies such as The Da Vinci Code and Pride and Prejudice. The final series of The Hollow Crown will air in 2016. And there's a photograph of the outside of the Great Hall with scaffolding and barriers and all sorts of things to hide what Mr. Cumberbatch might be doing, and also a smiling picture of Mr. Cumberbatch himself.
This item is headed Concern Over Start of Barton Farm Works. And there is a little picture of someone who is concerned, and that's Anthony Murden. Winchester's biggest development since the 1980s began this week as work started on Barton Farm. One of the city's main routes was disrupted while workers cleared a path for machinery to build the 2,000-home estate. Around 20 trees were felled on Monday as Andover Road North was reduced to one lane near the site between Harestock Road and Henry Beaufort School. Temporary traffic lights will go up near the new access junction in January. Engineering work will begin in earnest in the new year, with housing construction due in the spring. Some Andover Road residents will live with building on their doorstep for more than 5 years. Anthony Murden, who lives opposite, said nearby Wellhouse Lane, which will link with the finished estate, could make a better access point, disrupting fewer people and fixing a notorious accident spot. "It's a staggeringly poor solution," he said. "It's going to be a huge amount of inconvenience to everyone coming in and out of Winchester. At what point would we get consulted about points like this?" Do the public ever get consulted about major traffic changes? I'm sure they do not. Mr. Murden, an architect, added that he accepted inconvenience and supported the development, but was sceptical that work on the junction would stay temporary. He has been told by Winchester City Council to expect work opposite his house for up to 6 years. Another resident, who asked not to be named, said, "It's going to be horrendous when the heavy stuff starts. This road is going to be a mud bath. Why they chose not to go in from Wellhouse Lane, I've got absolutely no idea." Andover Road, Winchester's main access point from the north, is set to be rerouted through the Barton Farm estate. The current road will become a pedestrian boulevard. The Barton Farm Forum on Tuesday discussed the construction plan. Working hours will be between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Mondays to Fridays, and 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturdays. The council has employed an officer, Yvonne Keyworth, with the planning enforcement background, to liaise with Carla Holmes over any issues. Carla said work on the junction will continue until December the 19th, pausing over Christmas and resuming from January the 5th until the end of March. Robert Westwood of Carla Holmes said it intended to employ locals and meetings had been held, giving local contractors the chance to win the work. The next forum is due in late January or early February and is due to hear more about the closure of Andover Road. It is open to the public. 5 attended on Tuesday.
And this article under the heading Travellers Pitch Up on Car Park. French travellers who moved onto a Winchester car park a week ago are set to be evicted by police. 6 caravans were set up in a corner of the cattle market car park in Worthy Lane last Monday. But the family of 22 travellers, including 10 children, are set to return home after they were told to leave the site by police. The family spoke very little English, but one traveller, Parado Gorgin, told the Hampshire Chronicle that they were sad to be going. "We are moving back to France," he said, adding that the family encountered no trouble with commuters or residents during their stay. "Police were due to remove the group yesterday, Wednesday," he said. "The travellers will then return to Boulogne, a small town near France's German border. It comes just weeks after a group of travellers were removed from St. Catherine's Park and Ride."
Thieves target village firms. Police are investigating after items and cash worth £50,000 were taken from four Alsford businesses in one night. Thieves made off with two Mercedes vans, a classic BSA 1970s motorbike, aquatic equipment, tools and cash from businesses at Prospect Commercial Park on the night of October 30th. Gary Winslade, sales and marketing manager for Itchen Valley Brewery, said one of its vans was stolen. "It's a busy time of the year for a brewery. We're gearing up for Christmas, and being a van down is an inconvenience," he said. "We have got to hire a van, which is an extra cost to the business." A spokesman for electricians Butler and King said materials, tools and cash were taken after criminals broke through the security gate and their front door. They said, "I think we got off quite lightly because we didn't have any vehicle stolen, but it's just the aftermath of tidying up and insurance claims." FDS Aquatics were also targeted, as well as shop fitting company Pop Modular. Anyone with information is asked to call Winchester CID on 101 or the charity Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111, where information can be left anonymously.
Developer to hold second Pitt Vale Homes exhibition. A second public consultation is to be held for a proposed 350-house development near Winchester. Next Monday, December the 8th, Linden Homes will be on hand to talk about its plans to build at Pitt Vale, between Enmill Lane and the Badger Farm roundabout. The exhibition runs from 2:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Tower at King's School. Vivienne Barnes of Compton Way, Oliver's Battery, said, "In the context of all the other current and proposed developments going on in Winchester and public opposition to much of it, as seen during last Saturday's protest in Winchester, I hope the council will take a step back and consider Pitt Vale and all future development very carefully before giving the green light." She added, "It's time that our planning officers looked at the much bigger picture before agreeing to any more bolted-on housing developments without putting in place the infrastructure to support it. Councillors have urged residents to comment on the consultation by emailing lpp2@winchester.gov.uk.
Surgery in doubt over Sainsbury's delay. A senior Bishop's Waltham doctor has said there is no plan B for the town's stretched GP surgery if a retailer pulls out of plans to build a new practice. Sainsbury's was set to build a £1.6 million facility alongside its new superstore in Abbey Mill under plans approved in 2011. But last week, the Hampshire Chronicle reported that the project is in doubt after the retail giant confirmed it was dropping dozens of planned supermarkets. Dr. Simon Hunter said there have been no discussions about the future of the surgery should Sainsbury's pull out of the scheme. "We don't have a contingency plan," he said. "We've looked for various deals at redeveloping this site or moving elsewhere, but nothing else has been affordable or practical. If it doesn't go through, we carry on in this building and we make do. It's not ideal, but this is reality." The surgery's doctor-to-patient ratio has long been above the national average and requires expansion to take on more GPs. Dr. Hunter said the surgery's workload had quadrupled since it opened in the late 70s. With its patient base growing from 8,000 to 13,000. And the town's population is set to grow further in the next 20 years, with 500 new homes proposed by Winchester City Council. Dr. Hunter added, "We get nods from various people around the village about bits of land which are coming up, but we're competing against property developers. Housing prices are buoyant. We can't compete against a property developer." Sainsbury's has frustrated civic chiefs by refusing to confirm whether the store is going ahead, saying it is under review. Councillor Rob Humby, leader of Winchester City Council, said Bishop's Waltham County Councillor said the surgery will be first on the list of priorities if the giant retailer does eventually pull out. "We know it's a significant issue for Bishop's Waltham, and we need them now to do something," he said. "We're not too fond of what Sainsbury's are doing." He added that he didn't know whether the City Council could dictate a contribution to local health care from a property developer.
Work starts to ease winter floods threat. Work is being carried out that could ease flood problems in Winchester this winter. The Environment Agency is removing pilings and widening the banks of the River Itchen upstream of the city. Heb Lehman, project officer for the Test and Itchen River Restoration Strategy, said it is being carried out about 4 miles north of Winchester until mid-December. He said, "We are allowing the river to expand when it needs to in times of flood. It will flood out to those fields which it didn't in January. It's a benefit for the conservation of the river and with the potential to increase flood storage." Mr. Lehman said the work will also improve the wildlife habitats. Both rivers require a certain habitat, but because of history, dredging, industry, etc., they are both failing their designation, he said. "My job is to work with landowners to encourage them to restore their sections of river to raise the standards." The team is also working on a feasibility report on a weir south of the city, with a view to taking it out, which will improve conveyance through Winchester. The report is also expected to be finished by mid-December, and if it proves possible, the work is expected to be carried out in October next year. It would also improve the salmon spawning habitat. Councillor Kim Gottlieb, Itchen River Ward Councillor, said there is a real threat of floods this winter. "I am yet to examine the full details of these proposals, but I'm very pleased that the Environment Agency is getting prepared ahead of this year's potential floods, which of course we all hope won't actually happen," he said. "We do know that the water table at the moment is higher than it was this time last year, so the potential is a real one for flooding. People, whether an individual or an organisation, need to be prepared. If it works, we will all be delighted." Earlier this year, thousands of sandbags were deployed across the county and army engineers lowered sandbags into the River Itchen near Kingsworthy to stop water flowing into Winchester. And is a photograph of a large digger scooping out the banks of the River Itchen.
Seeds from an ancient New Forest tree, earmarked hundreds of years ago to be felled to become part of a Royal Navy ship, have been saved for research. A beech tree bearing the King's Mark, an arrow etched into the trunk, was one of the trees chosen to be included in Kew's Millennium Seed Bank. The New Forest National Park Authority identified the beech tree near Emery Down as one of five species to be included in Kew's UK National Tree Seed Project. Seeds collected as part of the project will be banked in the underground vaults at Wakehurst to ensure the species are safe for the future. Tree officer Liz Beckett said representatives from the Navy would have reserved the beech tree as it was a straight prime specimen and therefore ideal for planks used for ships' interiors. For some reason, this one wasn't used. The New Forest has the greatest concentration of ancient and veteran trees in Western Europe. It's exciting to think that this historic tree, earmarked by the Navy hundreds of years ago, will now form part of this national collection. Liz said they are working with Kew to collect seeds from crabapple, whitebeam, beech, hornbeam, gorse and rowan. The seeds can play a vital role in research projects and conservation work to protect UK trees and woodlands, including against pests and diseases such as ash dieback. Kew's Millennium Seed Bank works with a network of partners across 80 countries and has successfully banked over 13% of the world's wild plant species. They are on target to save 25% of those species with bankable seeds from 2020. 75,000 species, and there is a photograph of tree officer Liz Beckett presenting the beech tree seeds in quite a substantial number of them in a bag to Simon Callow from Kew.
Lecturers take on grueling challenge. Charity race in memory of former student. College lecturers are gearing up for a 125-mile canoe race in memory of a former student who was lost at sea. Sparsholt College's Sport and Outdoor Education lecturers are training for the Devizes to Westminster race, which takes place over Easter next year. It is in memory of former student James Mail, who was among the crew lost at sea when the yacht Cheeky Rafiki went missing on its way home from Antigua in May. The team of four will raise money for the RNLI Forever by the Seas Fund, which was set up by the crew's loved ones. Scott Fancourt, who's leading the team of lecturers, said, "James studied outdoor education here at the college and is remembered very fondly by the team. We wanted to show our support by giving something back and felt this grueling challenge would be a fitting tribute to an adventurous young man with a great passion for the outdoors, in particular water sports." He is joined by Lawrence Blair, Gareth Rogers and Kaj Berenson. They will all compete in the senior doubles class, which is racing non-stop over 125 miles, including 77 portages. The first 52 miles is along the Kennet and Avon Canal to Reading, the next 55 on the River Thames to Teddington, and the final 17 miles on the tidal portion of the Thames. It is a severe test of skill, physical strength, mental stamina and planning. The team are already training 5 days a week. To sponsor them, go online at, and this is all lowercase, rnli.tributefunds.com. And there's a photograph of the four men holding one of their canoes. Looks a very lightweight thing. And they all look very determined and happy about what they're about to do.
And the heading for this is Jasmine Streaks Ahead, spelt A-head, to win cover award. Judges at a national hairdressers competition were tickled pink, blue and any other colour when three Winchester trainees took gold in their respective fields. Megan Helford, Jasmine Hurst and Helen Anderson took home a handful of prizes at the Harrington's Hairdressing Group's 12th Annual Awards. The three competed head to styled head with a number of contestants from across the South, creating a range of cuts and colours to be judged by some of the industry's leading professionals. Miss Helford took second place in the L'Oreal Award for Colour and was named one of four winners in the Autumn Colour Project. She was also a finalist in the Hairdressers Journal front cover photoshoot competition, along with third-year trainee Jasmine Hurst, who then went on to be named her year group winner. Trainee stylist Helen Anderson was also thrilled after being named one of four winners in the Autumn Colour Project. Judge Errol Douglas said, "Harrington's have put on a wonderful display and the standard of hairdressing is incredibly high. These stylists are the future stars of the hairdressing industry."
This article is headed, "Why Click and Collect is Booming." The best of both worlds, it says. There are few slips of paper more offensive than the depot card, the thorn in the side of online shoppers the world over that kicks all of the convenience out of the online process. As you head for the post office depot in the pouring rain, you curse yourself for not just popping into the shop. It's little surprise, then, that click and collect continues to go from strength to strength, combining the convenience of online retail with the ease of collecting whenever you want. The power of click and collect has even stretched to dot-com retailers, including ASOS and eBay, who set up in the 90s and the noughties, double O's, as part of the move to pull traffic away from the high street. Click and collect may seem like a technical minefield, only fit for navigation by huge chains with a seemingly endless tech budget. But in fact, it's an accessible and inviting opportunity that many independent retailers are offering. You can take advantage of click and collect services at a number of Winchester's best-loved independent stores, including Childhood's Dream, Kingsgate Books and Prints, and Boudoir Blush. The concept is also a godsend for smaller units of national stores. The Winchester branch of Debenhams, for example, carries only a small proportion of Debenhams' general stock, a fact which could have previously deterred shoppers and sent them to larger high street destinations. The peace of mind that Click and Collect offers shoppers the opportunity to secure their must-have items and then spend the rest of their trip browsing for extras in Winchester's enticing array of independent and speciality shopping destinations. In a city such as Winchester, with so many perfect spots to stop for a coffee, Click and Collect offers a wealth of opportunities to splash a little extra cash on the high street. Research by Conlumino and eBay suggests that the presence of Click and Collect in this year's Christmas shopping spree will be up around 40% from last year, cementing the format's presence in our buying habits. The battle between bricks and mortar and the World Wide Web may be ending, not with the series of boarded-up shop fronts that the noughties gloom mongers predicted, but with a spirit of collaboration. High streets are a key part of our economy and culture, but the internet is a power that is not going to go away. As a recognition of the growing importance of click and collect in the British high street, the View Winchester mobile directory is now equipped with a comprehensive listing of every business in the city offering the click and collect service.
Big achievement for small school. One of the smallest schools in Hampshire has been named one of the best in the country. Oslebury Primary School, near Winchester, has been ranked number 18 of the top 50 small state primary schools. It was announced in the Sunday Times earlier this month. The school, which has just under 80 pupils, is already one of the best performing primary schools in the Winchester area. Elena Ponson, head teacher, said, "This is a massive achievement for our pupils and staff to be ranked so highly across the whole country. This really confirms that Oslebury Primary is a small school with big ambitions for every single pupil." And there are seven of them in a photograph, holding at each end a large A4 size piece of paper with a star on, and in the centre, TOP20, top 20. Well done.
12,000 drivers caught speeding in Hampshire. Police have caught more than 12,000 people breaking the speed limit on Hampshire's roads in 1 year. Figures released as part of a crackdown on road deaths show 230 motorists were caught in a week. That's 33 a day. The bosses of a leading motoring charity say this is only the tip of the iceberg, as they warn selfish drivers are putting thousands of pedestrians, cyclists and children at risk. Road safety charity, Brake, released the figures as part of its Look Out for Each Other campaign. The initiative, launched to mark a recent Road Safety Week, highlights the shocking statistics that there are 5 deaths and 61 injuries daily on Britain's roads. Figures reveal that police issued fixed penalty notices on 12,011 drivers caught breaking the speed limit in Hampshire in 2013. The data cover those stopped by officers using speed guns and does not include the many more photographed on fixed cameras or summoned to court for high-speed offences. Those living in the SO16 postcode of Southampton were the biggest offenders, with 832 people caught, followed by the city's SO19, with 709 people stopped. This compares with just 94 in Brockenhurst and 104 in North Baddesley. Other hotspots include Eastleigh and Bishopstoke, with 606 caught speeding, Rumsey, 537, Chandlersford, 522, and 515 in the Botley, Hedge End and West End areas. Meanwhile, 144 people across the county received fixed penalty notice for careless driving. The new category of offence, launched in August, include penalties for tailgating and middle lane hogging. Figures for the wider southwest area show 75,421 people were penalised for speeding or for careless driving last year, one every 7 minutes. Over the same period, 190 people were killed and 1,795 seriously injured on the roads. Sergeant Rob Hurd, Hampshire Constabulary's road safety officer, said, "This campaign will raise awareness to people about the dangers of distractions out there on our roads, and we need to make sure that people look out for each other and take extra care." Julie Townsend, Deputy Chief Executive for Brake, said, "When drivers use roads without care for others, the consequences can be tragic and horrific. People are killed and badly injured and their lives ruined forever because of a moment of impatience or selfishness. The wider consequences are that if we don't look out for each other on the roads, people will be afraid and will be unable to get out and enjoy their community and live active lifestyles. That's why, instead of making our streets stressful, risky places, we're asking all road users to look out for and protect each other, particularly the most vulnerable."
Winchester Rotarians travelled to Uganda to forge links with local clubs and spread education resources to schools. Teachers John Wilkinson and Myra Wilkinson visited 12 schools to support Education Uganda, a Stockbridge-based charity bringing resources and expertise to impoverished primary schools. During the 2-week trip, microbiologist Mrs. Wilkinson taught laboratory safety to hospital technicians. The Wilkinsons were joined by Winchester Rotaractor Luke Addison, who founded Winchester Rotary's Youth Wing last year. The 21-year-old, twinned Kasese, which I think must be the Ugandan place, and Winchester Rotaracts, helping them build a well for clean water at a local primary school. Uganda has a 70% literacy rate and 40% of its population lives in poverty. In 6 months, the Global Rotary has reached 14,000 pupils and more than 200 teachers, with 80% using libraries which volunteers have helped to fund and build. Mr. Addison said, "The trip was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. I want to go back. I think it's going to be my passion as long as I live." And there is a photograph, very jolly set of people. There's John and Myra Wilkinson with Luke Addison in Uganda with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or 7 Ugandans that they've obviously been working with there.
Illegal tobacco factories shut down. £300,000 tax dodge uncovered by Revenue and Customs. Officers have shut down an illegal tobacco factory in Hampshire after uncovering an operation that would have led to an estimated £300,000 tax dodge. Specialist teams from HM Revenue and Customs, HMRC, raided the factory at an industrial unit in Bishop's Waltham, where they found a ton of tobacco along with counterfeit tobacco pouches, duty labels and processing machinery. Two men were arrested in connection with the illegal operation, which would have filled 30,000 standard 50-gram tobacco pouches in a bid to evade more than £300,000 in tax. It comes just 4 weeks after a gang who set up an illegal tobacco factory in Southampton were jailed for a total of more than 10 years after officers raided a property in John Street. Tian Yang, Xu Lan Lin, Hua Wang and Yun Wang were snared by their own CCTV, which showed around 3 tons of tobacco being illegally processed and packaged in a bid to evade more than £600,000 in tax. HMRC has confirmed that there is no link between the factory in Southampton and the raid in Bishop's Waltham. The latest discovery was made after HMRC investigators arrested 2 men at a Warwickshire police-led road check at Warwick Services on the M40, where they stopped a van containing around 0.5 ton of processed tobacco. Investigations led officers to the factory in Bishop's Waltham just 2 days later. 2 men, a 36-year-old from Portsmouth and a 28-year-old from Glasgow, were arrested on suspicion of being involved in the fraudulent evasion of excise duty and have been bailed until May 2015. John Cooper, Assistant Director of Criminal Investigation at HMRC, said, "Disrupting criminal trade is at the heart of our strategy to clamp down on the illicit tobacco market, which costs the UK around £2.1 billion a year in lost revenue. This is theft from the taxpayer. Samples of the tobacco are being analysed and the rest will be destroyed. Anyone with information about the illegal tobacco should contact the customs hotline on 0800 59 5000.
100 homes affected by burst water main. Around 100 homes were left without water after a burst pipe flooded a major Winchester road last weekend. Supply for up to 2,500 homes was affected as workmen scrambled to fix the mains pipe in Berwick Road on Saturday morning. Dave Knight, a contractor for Southern Water at the scene, said 100 homes in Berwick and Park Roads were left without water for just over 3 hours. Meanwhile, residents in Week, Hairstock and the Worthies reported low pressure and discoloured water. The team at the scene suspected that the pipe had split under pressure. Parts of Andover Road were flooded as water streamed almost 0.5 mile towards the city's railway station. Residents took to the street, urging motorists to slow down as cars soaked pedestrians with the cascading water. Sarah Elwick of nearby Linwood Court said, "I was gripping to the side of the pavement just trying to get into town. There's some very inconsiderate drivers." A Southern Water spokesman said workmen stemmed the flow at around 10 a.m. after replacing a 7-metre piece of mains pipe. He added, "We are sorry for the inconvenience and apologise to customers whose water supplies were affected." The area's water supply has been hit several times over the past few years. A stretch of Berwick Road was closed in 2012 after a burst main, while 50 homes were left without water in 2010 as Park Road and parts of Barton Farm were flooded after a leak. And there are 2 photographs, one with the digger, big red digger, and the Clancy Dockra van, who were obviously the contractors, and a very good picture of the water literally gushing down Andover Road.
"Let there be light as arch shines bright. Sipping their mulled wine and singing carols, residents gathered to see the lights switch on at a Winchester medieval gateway. It is the first time the Kingsgate on Kingsgate Street has been decorated in the run-up to Christmas. Some 20 people turned up I'm sorry, I read that again. Some 30 people turned up to see the tree lights turned on by the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester. Flower seller Terry Young handed out flowers, and Joe Arthur played the keyboard to accompany the carols. And there is a delightful photograph of all this group of people to see the festive lights switched on for the first time. And there they are. And in the background, you see the lovely medieval arch at Kingsgate with the lights on inside it, looking very nice.
Arrests made after city assault. Five people have been arrested and bailed in connection with an unprovoked attack in Winchester that left a man seriously injured. He was rushed to hospital with severe head and facial injuries after the incident in St Cross Road on Friday, November the 14th. A 35-year-old man told police he was walking towards Ranelagh Road with a friend at around 3:35 a.m. when they were approached by a group of four men and a woman. Some of the group struck the two men, leaving one injured on the ground. The injured man was taken to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital for treatment. A 22-year-old man, three 21-year-old men, and an 18-year-old woman have been released on bail until February the 4th.
No comment on sale report. A hotel chain that started in Winchester has refused to comment following reports that it could be put up for sale. In the same week that Hotel du Vin celebrated its 20th anniversary, it was announced that its owner, KSL Capital Partners, is close to selling the business. According to a report, the private equity firm, which is based in Denver, Colorado, has appointed investment bank UBS to conduct a full review of strategic options for Malmaison Group. The review is expected to lead to a formal auction of the Hotel du Vin and Malmaison brands, the report said. A spokesman for Hotel du Vin's public relations firm said the group is not commenting at this stage. It is believed the brand is operating business as usual, with ambitions for expansion remaining. Malmaison has recently announced it will open its first Hotel du Vin property inside the M25 after purchasing Cannizzaro House in southwest London. The investment will cost £1 million. The two hotel chains run nearly 30 sites across the UK, with 3,000 people employed by Malmaison Group. It was previously owned by MWB Group, which fell into administration in November 2012. The report said it was unclear how large the price tag attached to the group by KSL would be.
Businesses in Winchester have welcomed major regional road changes after improvement plans were announced. The National Road Investment Strategy is to invest £15 billion over the next 7 years across the country, including works to many of Winchester's major routes. Dubbed the biggest roads upgrade in a generation, the government is funding the creation of more than 1,300 miles of extra lanes in a bid to cut congestion by 2020. Works to upgrade parts of the M3 as a smart motorway will be implemented from Junction 9 at the Winchester interchange with the A34 to Junction 14. These include improvements to the slip roads at junctions 10 to 14, as well as carriageway widening and lane realignment. Winchester Business Improvement District Manager Catherine Turness said, "It's pleasing to hear the government is investing more into the roads which surround Winchester. And although I doubt the improvements will have a direct impact on businesses within the city, any scheme which improves the visitor experience in accessing the city from the M3 and the A34 will be valuable. There will also be technology enhancements made on the A34 at junction 13 to junction 9, including detection loops, CCTV cameras and other driver information systems. About £350 million will also be spent to transform the A27 with a new bypass at Arundel to complete the, quote, missing link, unquote." Jim Davison, London and South East Region Director of Manufacturing Organisation EEF, said, "As far as manufacturers are concerned, the strategic road network is the most business-critical infrastructure network. The announcement is a significant step forward, filling in the gaps to create a network that better supports growth. This is, however, just a medium-term catch-up, and we can't afford to allow this level of drift in maintaining and upgrading our road network in the future," Mr. Davison said. In our recent survey of members, 65% chose the strategic road network as one of their top three priorities for infrastructure investment. The road investment strategy takes this into account, including newly announced upgrades to junctions along the M25, a key road for manufacturers seeking to invest, expand and export in our region. Speaking at the House of Commons on Monday, Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine said, "This is fantastic news for the country and the region, because Junction 9 sits on a major trade route to the south coast, including for our vital car industry heading out of the Black Country to the ports. But it is also brilliant news for Winchester and my constituents in Winnall especially, who suffer gridlock congestion which stretches far and wide as soon as things clod up on the M3. I know they and the businesses based on the Winnall trading estate will be really pleased to hear this news."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thank you to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.